Congratulations on your piece, Gladys, A Leader's Undoing. But more particularly, congratulations on being the people who actually picked up the thread that really uncovered the smoking gun, I'd say.
Oh, thanks. I appreciate that. Thank you.
Yeah. So, from the point of view of an active current affairs journalist on the ABC, you must see the press conference government handling of information up close. Can you give my listeners an understanding of that kind of minefield?
Press conferences are always really, quite carefully managed sort of affairs. Journalists are obviously entitled to ask whatever questions that they want, but often there's a lot of political journalists are very tied up with the news of the day, and that's what they ask about. So it can be really hard to sort of push past that boundary of, what's the news of the day, what's in the political cycle today, and to sort of go beyond it and challenge political figures on difficult questions that they don't want to answer.
Well, there's a sort of a catch-22 going on, really, isn't it? Because being knowledgeable as a political pundit is one thing, but to ensure that they'll actually continue to speak to you, you need to tread a very fine line, don't you?
Yeah, and that's something that I wrote about a little bit in the book as well, which was something that Gladys Berejiklian was and her office was very good at. They were very good at cultivating these people in the press gallery and building allies there and kind of keeping people close. So it made it very hard for them to be critical and to push their reporting a little bit. And what can often happen is if you do sort of push those boundaries, you get frozen out very quickly and you lose that level of access. I mean, there are some, and probably not as many as there should be. There are some political reporters that do really, that do manage to strike that balance where they stay independent. But I think a lot of political reporters do find themselves, a little bit captured by politicians' offices on any side of politics, really. It's a feature of a broader problem in the way that some of our reporting systems are structured.
Well, it was actually reading your piece. It is a little bit of a reminder of say Louis XV's French court or something. It's a very mannerly arrangement, isn't it?
Yeah, that's right. My personal experience with that, which I wrote about in the book, is when I had to go to this press conference and ask Gladys Berejiklian some questions about this shooting club grant, which, as you sort of touched on, was one of the issues that ICAC ended up focusing on. And we were aware that ICAC was looking into this grant at this time. We wanted to try and get some answers from Gladys Berejiklian on it, but couldn't. And when I showed up at this press conference, it was you've got to sort of let things go through the motions. There's these sort of unspoken rules that, the politician that convenes it sort of has to, gets to say something to kick things off. They'll sort of go, they'll throw to another person, and they'll continue to talk, and then there'll be usually a couple of questions on whatever the topic is that they've set for the press conference. And then if you sort of get past all of that, then it's sort of considered acceptable to ask questions on other topics and broader topics. And so you've got to really kind of pick your moment to work around these unspoken rules of press conferences and to kind of break through them a little bit more.
Well, it takes a certain amount of bravery and focus, I suppose.
Look, I mean, I certainly wouldn't call myself particularly brave, but probably more just a little bit nosy and pushy is probably a better sort of descriptors. I just think that, if I had some questions I wanted to ask and I didn't feel like I got the answers from, the written questions that I'd sent to Gladys Berejiklian's office, and I thought it was quite reasonable that she provide an answer to them. So, and that's what, that's what I went and did at that press conference.
And of course, this is right through COVID. So, of course, there was this mystique around the role, as you call it in the book, that state premiers became rock stars. I love that.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, and that sort of made it an even more of a challenging environment to kind of push through that daily news cycle, because it was a real sense of crisis and emergency, and understandably, people were very focused on their very kind of immediate pressing needs and demands. You know, people were concerned about goods and services that they could get, you know, opening hours, whether particular services were open at all. All of those are really legitimate concerns and issues. But that didn't mean that it wasn't also legitimate to ask about other things going on. And I think there was certainly a massive public interest in, you know, the fact that ICAC was, you know, what we were able to piece together is that at that stage that ICAC had been, you know, beginning to investigate for some months, and that its attention was turning on the Premier herself.
Before we leave the Premier's office, I wanted to bring up the way they used to manage, or maybe they still do, manage information given out to journalists. Of course, the professional skills required mean that you can't actually pontificate on something. You can't say, "I've gathered these details, and then I'll take it one step forward and pretend that this is what the outcome is for those facts." You actually have to have things attributed to particular people, and they were doing a very sneaky thing that sidelined journalists' ability to actually push a ball forward, weren't they? They had a particular method.
Yeah, and this is something that is common in a lot of political offices now, which is where rather than responding to a series of questions, what was certainly something that was one of the hallmarks of Glynis Berejiklian's office and her responses is that they would not provide any on the record response or provide a very limited on the record response, but then provide a series of lines in what was described as background information. And often in that background information would be a more robust denial of a particular matter that was being raised. But the challenge with doing that is that it kind of warns the journalists off and scares them a little bit because, you know, you can have this really robust denial set out in this background text, but it's not actually attributable to that politician's office or something like that. So if it turned out that it wasn't quite correct, you know, down the line, it was very difficult to contest that, because one of these kind of rules in journalism is that when a statement is provided on background, it can't be attributed to that particular person or entity that gives it. It's designed as contextual information, but that contextual information in these cases was being really stretched beyond the limits of what it ordinarily would be. And I even interviewed a journalist at The Australian who sort of outlined the way that some of that had worked and some of their concerns with it. And that was Yonni Bishan, who was the Australian state political editor at the time. So I think this was an issue that concerned a lot of different reporters in a lot of different areas as well.
They were really playing, the politicians were really playing fast and loose. And let's now go to ICAC. I actually, because it was COVID, I actually watched the whole sequence of first interviews in ICAC that were made public with Berejiklian, and some of the more grueling ones with Darryl Maguire. And you know, in a sense, it's a little bit like watching paint dry. But this is the beauty of it, isn't it? Because you actually do something in your book which I find really great, because it contextualizes the methodology of ICAC, and you were talking about their strategy. That was really fascinating. Tell my listeners about how you saw the ICAC questioning.
I mean, I think that one of the things that ICAC is very good at is kind of building its own case theory or building a picture of what they think could have or should have happened in relation to a particular series of issues. Because often what ICAC is looking at is something that's gone wrong in the probity system. So it's something that hasn't been declared by a politician, by a public servant. You know, it's these it's what they're looking at is what, you know, what something that someone should have done that they didn't do properly.
Someone actually says that it's a permanent royal commission.
Yes, yeah. And so what they were trying to do in relation to Gladys Berejiklian and her conduct in relation to a series of matters about Darryl Maguire was to create a bit of like a almost a parallel world where they asked different political figures and different public servants, if you had known that Gladys Berejiklian and Darryl Maguire were in a relationship, if it had been disclosed, would you have acted differently? And for many of those politicians and public servants, the answers were yes. And that, in some respect, was quite critical to ICAC demonstrating its case theory that there had been a potential conflict here and that it did impact or change the way that particular decisions in government had been made. That was one of the ways that they kind of slowly fleshed out this, you know, very complicated and difficult to tell story.
Now tell the listeners about how you and your colleague, you spent many hours ferreting out information. Tell them about, I mean, because this is the not very glamorous part of actually being an investigative journalist.
Yeah, yeah. I said this is my colleague Alex McDonald. Look, I mean, what we were obviously interested in this story when it first broke, and we were trying to work out whether there were any other issues that hadn't been examined in much detail that we could dig into more. And you know, we just started doing what any journalist would do, which is to go to the documents that ICAC had already tabled and start picking through them and working out whether there was any little threads there that we could tug on and look into things a bit more closely. And we stumbled across this reference to the Clay Target shooting, this Clay Target grant. And ICAC had been looking at it in a little bit because it thought that Darryl Maguire had actually profited from the purchase of some chairs from this grant, and which was a kind of a very a bizarre side detail. But it never really featured in any prominent way in their investigation, and it was a bit of a side note. But what I was interested in is, well, I just thought, well, look, this obviously was something that Darryl Maguire cared a lot about, and we just wondered whether, you know, how the decision making for that grant had occurred. And when we, you know, we dug into that for sort of many weeks, and we came to the conclusion that it had gone to this what's known as the Expenditure Review Committee that Gladys Berejiklian sat on at the time. And that, you know, she would have been involved in approving that funding. And we thought, well, I mean, that seems like that's a clear decision point for Gladys Berejiklian to have been involved in. You know, she said that she did not disclose her conflict at any point in time, her relationship with Darryl Maguire. Does that mean there was a conflict there? And that's effectively what we produced a story on for 7:30, examining that very question. And shortly after we did that story, ICAC announced it was taking some further investigative steps, and we later learned that one of those investigative steps was looking into this grant and Gladys Berejiklian's role in that decision making.
Berejiklian is a very skilled politician, and as you point out, she still has a very high approval rating, and she brazens things out. It was fascinating that her line was that everybody's corrupt, effectively. Everybody does it.
Yeah, I don't think it was quite that everyone's corrupt. I think her view in that was the she says that everyone engages in pork barreling. Words to that, yeah. that effect, that the practice of pork barreling, which is
I'll have to jump in. I think that's corrupt behavior, but obviously there's a difference between pork barreling and corrupt behavior, apparently, in definition.
So this was an issue that came up in the context of another grant, administering another grant scheme, where there had been some criticism in New South Wales around the coalition's handling and awarding of funds to certain local councils and whether it had been along political lines. And Gladys Berejiklian was just a very staunch defender of that program. And in that defense, sort of made these comments saying, well, you know, pork barreling is not illegal. Everyone does it. It's just a sort of an accepted and entrenched part of politics. And I think she's quite right about that, that it's, you know, it is accepted and it is an entrenched part of politics. But I think that what the ICAC investigation and the outcome does show is that it isn't something that's without consequence. You know, ICAC has drawn, perhaps for the first time ever, like a very strong line in the sand over the way in which public funds can be used, that I think is going to put a lot of politicians in both state governments and federal governments on notice about what is within the realms of acceptable and what is not.
The element that's very important for you as a journalist was who you were working for when you were doing the investigation. And it tells us a reason for why the ABC is a kind of special place, doesn't it?
Obviously, at working for the public broadcaster, you've got to be extremely fair and scrupulous in how you do your reporting. I'm very lucky to have always felt very supported within that organisation to do difficult stories and to also tell them in a really fair way. I think these stories have withheld the test of time and led to some real life sort of consequences. I was very lucky to be able to do them, and I'm fortunate to be able to continue to tell stories at the ABC now.
Yeah, because it could have been, the plug could have been pulled. That's what I'm saying. Like, they could have thought that it was not worth your while to continue.
I don't think so. I guess that's one of the great things about working at the ABC. I've never felt like that. I've always felt really supported. I think at some other news organisations, perhaps that might have been a more live fear or concern, but it was never really something that even crossed my mind at all.
You do a fairly interesting excursion into the look at the differences between how male and female politicians are treated in the media. And the reason you do that is because this was part of Gladys Berejiklian's defence strategy, wasn't it?
Look, I think that this was a really challenging issue to look at and explore. I mean, effectively, one of the arguments that was kind of put forward by Gladys Berejiklian was that, she cared deeply for Darryl Maguire, she trusted him, and because of that, she just thought that he had done the right thing. And it raised some really interesting questions around her agency that I think some, excellent female writers at the time captured exactly why that was kind of problematic and the disservice that did for feminism as well. The argument she was making was that even as this incredibly savvy and incredibly impressive political operator, that she somehow was kind of sort of just blinded by love, by this person. That was an argument that in the end ICAC did not really accept, that it formed the view that, she did turn a blind eye to his behaviour at certain point, and that was what led to her undoing. But, she had agency, she made choices, and those choices led to these sort of moments. That's not to say, however, that Gladys Berejiklian wasn't treated, unfairly by some sections of the media as well. And I think that, simply because she was a woman, she was treated unfairly at certain points. Some of the kind of prurient coverage of her was really quite nauseating as well. And I think that, she deserves our sympathy for that. But it doesn't excuse the kind of the broader questions around her conduct that are raised. So I sort of tried to just explore some of these issues a little bit, because they're kind of difficult, complicated questions that I think do require like a little bit more thought and depth, and it was nice to be able to reflect on them.
Interestingly enough, the element that made it absolutely impossible for her to continue was the fact that she was raised on her own petard, because the Liberals had come in under the guise of being clean and mean compared to the previous Labor government's very public exposure in the court with Habib. So it was pretty difficult for her to escape the clauses in her own ministerial behaviour arrangements, right?
Yeah, that's right. It was actually Mike Baird and his government that introduced these kind of additional requirements that said that if a minister in New South Wales breached the code of conduct, and that was it was a substantial breach, that was something that ICAC could investigate. This code is usually created by the premier of the day. And, you know, when Guy Spirogliano was premier, she signed off on it. So, you know, she had this code that her own ministers were required to abide by, that was policed by ICAC. And, it, you know, it, ultimately it was that very code that, you know, that she herself was required to abide by as well. So, it's kind of this was one of the ways that, she sort of became undone because of these conduct requirements that she had set for herself.
Well, that goes a little bit back to the whole reflection about female politicians or the whole role of image of women, that they're supposed to be holier than thou. And I was reading it and I was thinking about the Anne Sumner's famous book, you know, Damn Whores or God's Police. And she did a very good impersonation of God's police, really, didn't she?
Yeah, it's I think it's challenging. You know, it was obvious that you know, I think a lot of the kind of the image that Gladys Berejiklian had sort of constrained herself to or had created for herself was you know, was driven by a lot of those same kind of tropes in politics in Australia that and the way that female politicians are kind of typecast into certain sort of roles, and this kind of role that Gladys Berejiklian found herself in was this kind of quiet, you know, private person who didn't really have a personal life, was sort of married to the job, you know, it was, you know, and part of the reason that I guess she would have been in that role is because of the way that kind of women in Australian politics have been kind of boxed into these roles and these images. So I think, you know, she certainly deserves our sympathy for that. But none of that sort of really fundamentally excuses the broader questions about her conduct. But I think there are important questions for us to sort of think about in how we view our political leaders, how we view our female political leaders, and, you know, and how we can sort of do better from that.
Yeah, well, you finish with a really interesting broad view on what does this mean for ICAC, because ICAC's really significant development in the political landscape, and a little bit reflecting on what Berejiklian is expected to do, because she's gone to Optus. And they don't seem to mind having her on their board. But ICAC is the most significant thing that's happened really in the political landscape for a long time.
Yeah, yeah. So the Federal Integrity Body is, you know, is this massive game changer that now exists. And, you know, I think there are some lessons for that body in the New South Wales ICAC's investigation into Gladys Berejiklian. I mean, its reputation did really suffer because of the length of time it took to make findings in that investigation. There were some errors early on in sort of the handling of some sensitive information. So there were some quite legitimate concerns around ICAC that were raised. Although ultimately, you know, it's been found to have acted, you know, in good faith and done the best that it can. I think there are some. And one of the challenges is it's faced really strong political calls in New South Wales to have its wings kind of clipped. So, and I think, you know, one of the concerns is that you know, those kind of conversations could eventually happen, you know, to our newly established federal body as well. So, you know, I think the future of the New South Wales ICAC and its federal counterpart, you know, I really have been kind of thrown to the forefront as this debate has unfolded over the last few years. And I think it'd be really interesting to see what lessons there are from that and where we go from here.
Well, you know, it's a kind of rarefied air world in the sense that it's politicians, lawyers, investigative journalists, and a whole journalistic pack. Where do you think this relates to the general public and our democracy? Have you got a view on that?
Look, I mean, I think that this whole, you know, there are important lessons in this whole saga for our political institutions, for the way the public views political leaders, you know, and for journalists as well. I think it shows that there are, you know, it doesn't matter how popular a particular political leader is, we need to constantly be questioning their integrity and really be scrutinising their conduct. I mean, I think everyone was entirely shocked by what emerged about Gladys Berejiklian, because she did have such a good reputation. And you know, it's always important to keep an open mind about politicians and you know, and their conduct, but I think it's equally important to scrutinize them as well. So yeah, so there's some valuable lessons for everyone in it.